Gentlemen, before we begin with our FERC case, I want to remind the lawyers that we are not specialists. We're not specialized judges. We get very few FERC cases, and we are not, you cannot expect us to have the sort of knowledge that that FERC itself has. So we've had problems in the past. Lawyers who are accustomed to arguing before specialized administrative agencies come to us and think we have the same background that the agency officials do. And we don't. So you have to be very clear, use words of one syllable, and not try to snow us with jargon. That's the first thing. The second thing is, because of the number of parties and the limited amount of time, we want you to be very careful about avoiding repetition, whether repetition in your own argument or repetition of some point that's been made by someone else. So, without further ado, we'll begin, and on my list, I have Barry Cohen first, so we'll start with you.
Good morning, Your Honors. If it pleases the Court, my name is Barry Cohen. I'm appearing today on behalf of a group of parties who have challenged the cost allocation scheme approved by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission for transmission facilities that meet the criteria of multi-value projects, or MVPs. For the reasons I will explain, that scheme does not meet the requirement that the costs allocated to a party must be at least roughly commensurate with the benefits drawn by that party.
And before you go into those reasons, just to make sure I've got just sort of an overall handle on this thing, why isn't it rational to have what's basically a wind farm tax? Nobody is using the word tax, but taxes are imposed for things that we need but that no one would pay for in a regular market system. The states say we need renewable energy. It's way too expensive. So isn't it reasonable to charge everyone for it like a tax, which I think is one of the fundamental questions here.
Whether it's reasonable or not, Your Honor, I'm not sure I can say, but it is outside the statutory power that has been granted to FERC to impose such a tax. If the individual states wish to fund transmission that their utilities need by imposing a tax, their legislatures could do so.
Well, I understand that there's not a tax that's been imposed and it's not within their power, but I'm saying this is akin to that concept.
And I agree, Your Honor, and I think for that reason it's beyond FERC's power to impose this sort of rate to determine that utilities in Indiana, would, for instance, my clients, Hoosier Energy Rural Electric Cooperative, a cooperative in Indiana that is not subject to a state-imposed renewable portfolio standard. It is outside FERC's authority to determine, to impose, as you say, the equivalent of a tax to pay for renewable portfolio standards mandated by Michigan for Michigan utilities or Minnesota for Minnesota utilities or by other states for other utilities.
Are you challenging the principle of a multi-value project?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Are you challenging the principle of a multi-value project tariff or just how it's implemented?
The cost allocation scheme, Your Honor.
So what I want to know is why you think it's beyond FERC's power to decide on the level of generality, basically. I mean, FERC doesn't have to say the benefits within one county have to match up to the users in one county. FERC might think that region by region or state by state, but here, as we even recognized in our earlier Illinois Commerce Commission case, FERC has said this is an area-wide benefit, and so area-wide, in other words, the entire, it sounds like Japanese soup, the entire MISO area is benefited, and so everyone on some rational basis needs to contribute to this source of energy.
Well, I think for two basic reasons, Your Honor. First, the record does not actually support the finding that MVPs provide widespread benefits to the entire region.
Why do you say that? I mean, FERC goes on at great length as to why they think it does, in fact, benefit the entire region.
Yes, Your Honor. But the studies that supposedly
Well, take one of your clients, this Hoosier. Okay. So are you saying that this Hoosier company gets no benefits from...
We don't know, Your Honor.
Answer my question. You think no benefits?
There's
no benefits?
There is no demonstration in the record of benefits.
No benefits.
And have you
tried to measure them?
Your Honor, that's really beyond the power of an individual utility.
It's not beyond the power of an individual. You've got a company, and this company's claim is being screwed by the multi-value project tariff. So you have two ways to go. One, analytic, which is you study the benefits and the cost to your client, and you say the costs are disproportionate to the benefits. We're getting no benefits. We're getting small benefits. We're paying huge costs. That's one thing you could do you have not done. The other thing you can do, you can quit MISO, right?
Technically, we could, Your Honor. As a practical matter, the cost would be
Why?
Prohibitive.
What is the cost?
We would, under the tariff, we would continue to have to pay for the MVP projects, depending on how you rule on...
I understand. If you withdraw from MISO,
The tariff provides that a withdrawing transmission owner must continue to pay...
Well, that's the withdrawing issue. That's...
Right.
Okay, but that's not a continuing obligation.
No, it's only obligations that have accrued up to the time, which is obviously being looked at by FERC in one of the other cases here.
Right.
Now, I'm very interested in the exit cost from MISO, because if the exit cost is less, then you can leave if you think the costs are disproportionate to the benefits. Now, if the exit costs are high, then of course, maybe you can't leave. But if you can't leave, then you have to make a calculation as to the balance between the benefits and costs to your clients. I don't see any of that.
Your Honor, I do not believe my clients think that they would be benefited by leaving MISO.
No, that's not responsive. Who cares what they believe? They have to present evidence.
Plus, you still haven't answered Judge Posner's question with respect to the type of benefit your client. Are you saying your client is getting no benefits from this? Will get no benefits?
My client's analysis, based on the information that they have, did not reveal any benefits to them from the MVP projects.
Well, over the next decade, our entire system may transition more and more to renewable energy, and transitions are expensive. In light of that, isn't it reasonable to charge everyone for it and not use specific benefits as the measure when you look at the long-term perspective?
I don't think so, Your Honor, for two reasons. First, I think that's inconsistent with case law requiring that the costs and benefits of transmission upgrades be reasonably commensurate.
But over what area? I mean, we have statutes and power within FERC to create regional transmission organizations. This has been the move to improve efficiency, allow one region to wheel power to other regions if there's a natural disaster or something like that. That's what MISO is. That's what PJM is. I mean, this is the direction. And your clients, I think, by saying we're not getting any benefit, aren't looking at it along regional lines.
Your Honor, based on this Court's opinion in ICC versus FERC 4 years ago, we believe the proper granularity of that comparison is by pricing zone.
That's not what ICC says, though. ICC just says there's no evidence at all about anything. It says maybe it could even be regional.
Well, Your Honor, this Court did compare the costs and benefits to Commonwealth Edison. I don't read the opinion in ICC as saying that if there were benefits to other Midwestern utilities that could justify.
How far do you carry this down? Do they have to calculate costs and benefits for each utility?
I think each pricing zone, Your Honor. I think that's consistent with the cases that have come before,
what
including
pricing zone. What if within a zone, some little utility is heavily disadvantaged?
Well, generally, pricing zone reflects the historic transmission systems that have been built by individual transmission owners. And in general, an upgrade to the transmission system in that pricing zone will provide benefits to all of the little utilities
Why
that rely on that
zone. Why isn't the choice of the area quintessentially for FERC? I mean, what we said in ICC is, for that matter, it can presume that new transmission lines benefit the entire network by reducing the likelihood or severity of outages, e.g. Western Massachusetts Electric. That's a direct quote from ICC.
Right,
so why isn't FERC, as opposed to us or you, the right place to choose that level?
Well, in the first place it is, but we believe that the choice FERC has made here is contrary to what the cases the obligation that the cases have imposed upon.
But you have no statutory or regulatory language to hook that up.
Well, the statutory language, Your Honor, is that the rates must be just and reasonable. And
is that concretely what you want FERC to do?
Your Honor, MISO's own testimony in this case indicates that MISO does, in fact, calculate the projected costs and benefits of MVPs that it studies, pricing zone by pricing zone, and we want FERC to direct MISO to utilize that quantification in its cost allocation.
Wait, so you say that these costs and benefits have been quantified. So why
yes.
don't you present them? Why don't you tell them what they are?
Only MISO can do the quantification, Your Honor.
And they have you said it's been done.
But why don't you tell us
what the results are?
Because MISO has refused to provide us with those results. And it is impossible for us to do it ourselves because much of the information involves specific operating costs of generating units to calculate, for instance, the reduced production cost that new transmission might provide. Other utilities will not share their production costs with Hoosier because they're competitors.
MISO gave this information presumably to FERC, and FERC just isn't interested? Is that what you're saying?
I don't believe they did give the information to FERC, Your Honor. I believe MISO filed testimony saying we've done studies, they show benefits.
You're saying that MISO knows all the intra-regional consequences of the tariff. They're hiding that.
Yes, Your Honor, that is what the record shows.
So what you really want, you want that information. It's premature for you to be complaining about the impact of the tariff on your clients because you don't know what that impact is.
Well, we believe, Your Honor, that FERC, that MISO failed to carry its burden of demonstrating that its proposed rate was just and reasonable presenting that information.
You just want information from MISO. Maybe it'll show that your clients are benefiting.
That may be, Your Honor. That's why we ask
why,
for the
is
information.
Is that what you do? Is this a suit to get MISO's information? Is that what you want?
We would be happy with a remand and a directive to hold an evidentiary hearing on those questions, yes.
There hasn't been an evidentiary hearing?
No, Your Honor. An evidentiary hearing was requested.
I'm not talking about the oral. That's a very weak claim. That you want to have oral testimony. You're saying there's been no evidentiary hearing of any sort.
There was a paper hearing, Your Honor.
Look, a paper hearing is all you want in a case like this. You don't want a parade of expert witnesses.
Well, Your Honor, we think expert testimony would be useful, but
an expert testimony in a case of this complexity, FERC can decide whether it needs oral testimony or can go on the record. I mean, they have like hundreds of pages of their order without benefit of the expert witnesses. What more do you want?
Your Honor, we would like them to look at and consider the studies that MISO says were done that demonstrate the regional benefits of MVPs, but that were never presented in evidence in this matter, paper or otherwise.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Cohen.
Thank you, Your Honor.
For Ms. Moss?
Good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Deborah Moss, and I represent petitioners MISO Northeast transmission customers.
So you're really here about this Michigan thumb? Is that?
No. What we're here about is, like the ICC parties, we do not, the customers in MISO Northeast do not benefit from.
Who are your clients?
My clients are the state of Michigan, electric customers in MISO Northeast, and some electric utilities serving customers in MISO Northeast.
They are Michigan.
They are Michigan,
yeah.
But
so
the issue is not the Michigan.
That's a particular project, but I think the problem that I have with your position is the notion that projects like this Michigan Thumb project are going to generate energy using wind resources. That will increase the supply of energy in Michigan. So to the extent Michigan has needed to import it from other regions, it won't need to import as much. To the extent that maybe there's excess energy, maybe that area will become an exporter. The whole concept of these regional organizations is that it turns out energy is a much more tradable commodity than people thought in the 1950s or the 1930s or what have you. There are enormous areas over which energy can be efficiently transmitted. So to say that Michigan needs to be carved off as its own area just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, Your Honor, we don't disagree with your first premise, but the fact is that customers...
Well, isn't that the end of it then? Because if you agree that energy generated in Michigan is going to add to the total pool of energy in the area and going to affect both supply and demand and, of course, ultimately price, why doesn't that make it sensible for Michigan to be part of this region?
Well, because we've never objected to the Thumb Project being an MVP. The objection that we have to the cost allocation scheme at issue here is that because of geography, Michigan is a peninsula that is not significantly electrically interconnected with MISO, even though it's a part of MISO and 18% of MISO's load.
NIPSCO?
Sorry?
What about NIPSCO?
Sorry, what about NIPSCO?
Don't you get, aren't you...
Isn't there
aren't you
energy
connected
trade,
via NIPSCO with the rest of the MISO region?
Slightly, yes, but only 3.5% of MISO Northeast physical transmission interconnection capabilities with MISO, and 96.5% of its physical transmission interconnection capabilities with PJM and the Ontario.
Why don't you quit MISO and join PJM?
It is possible that the TOs might find that necessary, but that's not our intent here. We're not interested in trying to break up MISO.
Why don't you just quit? If you don't like MISO, if you feel they're not treating you fairly, you're right on the border with PJM, so quit MISO and join PJM.
I suppose it's possible that if the economic analysis found that was appropriate, that could happen, but that's not our intent here. Our only intent here is...
What would you lose if you quit MISO and join PJM?
I think it would depend on, we haven't calculated... First of all, we're not...
Well, you ought to calculate because if it's very low, then you've got a perfect remedy.
Well, that would be for...
You have to screw around with MISO's... decisions, you just join PJM.
That would be for METSI and ITC to decide.
And also, I might add that since there is a special provision for PJM, things sinking in PJM, as people seem to be saying, it's obvious looking at the southern border of Michigan that it abuts both Ohio and Indiana. It's a peninsula, but it's not just a little finger of a peninsula. It's a great big fat one. So there's a great amount of potential trade that Michigan might enjoy.
Well, that already occurs under the joint operating agreement. that they're nothing.
So you can't have it both ways. You can't say Michigan is just this sealed off separate little thing, and oh no, but actually it has enormous trade under joint operating agreements, et cetera.
Well, Michigan is sealed off with respect to the benefits of the MVP projects. And
I
the
don't
reason
see that,
for that,
because energy one place is energy that affects supplies elsewhere.
Well, but we're not just talking generally about energy. We're talking about projects that are specifically designed to bring wind power east.
Right, and I'm saying if Michigan builds with Michigan resources and Michigan companies a Michigan project in the thumb, then there's more energy in Michigan, and its position within MISO changes. And the same would be true if somebody builds something in Wisconsin. You know, it's going to change the whole mixture. It's interdependent. That's the point of an RTO.
Well, we just don't believe that MISO has presented evidence that the wind power projects...
They're getting a big new plant, right?
Do you mean in Michigan to attach to the Michigan thumb press?
Yeah. Benefit. Now, the question
that's
is...
That's the only benefit, and that's $510 million.
Now, what's the cost?
Well, the thumb project is $510 million, and the total MVP starter portfolio is $4.6 billion.
That's not my question. My question is, you get a benefit from this plant, and you also get a benefit from being connected with NIPSCO. Now, what's the offsetting cost? Have you calculated that?
The cost is 20% of the MVP portfolio. Of the total MVP portfolio.
Calculated the cost to you.
Well, the costs are,
the structure of the tariff, just to get back to the actual way it's paid, isn't it a surcharge when power is purchased, right?
It's the transmission cost based on your total usage.
Right.
As a percentage of MISO.
How much of a...
So it's 18%.
Okay.
And the problem is quantifying the benefits, because none of the evidence that MISO presented is on the level of individual utilities or pricing
zones.
So you
have actually measured the costs to you of the tariff. Is that what you're saying? You know the cost.
Well, approximately the costs,
but
yes.
You don't know the benefits.
Well, we believe that there are very minimal benefits other than the...
Have you estimated benefits?
It's impossible to estimate the benefits without the...
Well, it's impossible for you to estimate the benefits. It's impossible for MISO to estimate.
No, it's not impossible. What I was trying to say was it's impossible for us to estimate the benefits without the information underlying the studies, of which MISO only introduced summaries.
You're making the same point as Mr. Cohen, that you need access to MISO data?
Yes, only MISO can provide the information that we need to accurately... compare the cost to...
Asked in the suit for access to MISO? MISO's data? Have you asked the FERC to order that? Or?
We did not, but there was. I don't believe there was any opportunity for that.
I don't understand. You want to have its intra-regional cost-benefit analysis. You think you have the costs. But you don't have the benefits. You think those are buried in MISO's files. But apparently you haven't actually asked for access to
them. Well, we did in that we asked that a hearing be held, that it not a paper hearing. And
wait a second. What does paper versus oral have to do with it? If you want data that are in MISO's files, that's paper. You don't want some MISO... paid expert coming up and offering rhetorical estimates of cost. You want the data.
I would say it's both. Certainly it's a paper hearing.
Well, look, there's a difference between asking to be permitted to present a live witness and asking for production of data that's in their hard drives, right? Apparently, you've never asked for those data.
We asked that a hearing be held at which we would have...
No, you were asking for a hearing at which there'll be oral testimony.
Well, no, a hearing at which there would be the ability to engage in discovery.
Hundreds of pages of opinions are based on a lot of documentation. Now, if you thought they had failed to collect the necessary documents from MISO, you should have asked them not for expert witnesses, but say you want to see these data. Is that what you asked for?
Well, that's exactly what we would have asked for in discovery had we been granted the opportunity. That's exactly what we would have asked for in discovery.
Say to FERC, we need to have these data. We need to conduct discovery. Did you say that?
I believe that's what we said when we asked for a hearing.
Bet you didn't say that.
Can I ask about this formula, this 4% versus 96%? Because part of why you say you should get a pass is because you're only in the game for 3.5%, right? That's part of it. And here's what I want to know. Is that like a frozen number? Is that static that never changes in time? Because if you get a pass and then later on you decide you're going to need wind power in the future, you'll have instant access to wind power without having had to pay anything for connecting it to the grid.
Well, even if,
even
if we were more electrically interconnected to the rest of MISO, Michigan, because its RPS standard requires the use of wind generation within the state of Michigan, would still never be in it. We'd still never be able to benefit from wind generated in the Dakotas.
But you are, to the extent that supply affects price. That's my problem. Maybe you won't be importing as much energy anymore, so price will change. Maybe you will become an exporter of energy if you fill up the state of Michigan with wind farms.
It is possible, but it's our belief that that would only be an incidental benefit. I mean, the purpose that we're here today because the MVP projects are intended and will bring wind energy from the west of MISO to load centers in the east of MISO.
Are you conceding that the state of Michigan can place a ban on the importation of wind energy from the west?
It's not a ban on the importation, but it's a ban on the use of that to satisfy the percentage.
That sounds like a violation of interstate commerce. That sounds like a tariff.
I don't believe that's the case, but
a state can't say we don't. I mean, except if it's liquor, a state can't say we don't permit. Of other states to supply goods and services to our citizens.
That's not what the state of Michigan is saying. What the state of Michigan is saying is in order for utilities to satisfy the renewable portfolio standard, they have to take energy from wind plants within the state of Michigan.
That's what they're saying. That's like saying to a grocery store, in order to satisfy your requirements under Michigan law, you have to buy all your produce locally. That's unconstitutional.
Well, I suppose that's an issue for the Michigan legislature.
No, it's unconstitutional. The Michigan legislature can't say, well, we don't pay attention to the Constitution. Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Moss. We'll have to move on to our next counsel, Mr. Teichmer.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Steve Teichler. I speak today on behalf of Midwest ISO, Midwest ISO Transmission Owners, and the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin.
So perhaps you can answer the question about data that we've been talking about. It's your clients who have these studies that have not fully been disclosed. Is that correct?
I am not the person to ask about that. I can say generally that we did various studies to quantify the benefits, but our thrust here has been on a process. The starter projects here are sort of proof of concept, and what we're looking for is to establish a paradigm which allows regional cost allocation and regional transmission enhancements that are done on a rolling scale. The first tranche happened to be wind energy projects. The next tranche may be reliability projects. The next tranche may be economy projects.
So what is it you want?
What's that?
What is it you want?
Well, I want the rate-packing prohibition on PJM to be
less. You want PJM to be treated the same as any
exactly.
other
yes, Your
exporters,
Honor.
Yes. And so what you have to answer is why, given the peculiar geography of this bubble of PJM that comes out over where we're sitting right now, it seems, northern Illinois and a little bit of southern Wisconsin, plus the 2003 proceedings at FERC, why that doesn't justify different treatment of PJM than others.
Well, one, it was much more severe when the prohibition was put in. We were.
But FERC thinks it's still severe enough.
Truly fashioning. But that is not the right focus. The right focus is the nature of pancaking prohibition applies to existing facilities. It is not a prescriptive bar to the allocation of costs for new facilities. And indeed, the Commission's own jurisprudence indicates.
So why, explain that a little bit more. I know you said that, and there certainly is a difference between trying to recover all over again for sunk costs and trying to recover for something going into the future. But I thought this pancaking business was really just some kind of charge that got imposed when energy was transmitted across regional lines, and because of the strange lines of PJM, it crosses lines a bunch of times and winds up getting overcharged in a sense, charges compounded, which would be true for new as well as old, wouldn't it?
Yes. To quote the Supreme Court in the quote-unquote bad old days, rate pancaking was used as a defensive mechanism to prevent the broad dissemination of power within a region. And it's important to focus on the fact that...
And pancaking just means you're charging...
Multiple tolls
several times.
Over existing facilities.
Are we supposed to imagine like a stack of pancakes? I'm not
sure. Right, yes, exactly. And these are facilities that were built on behalf of native load and are paid for native load. And this court, in its ICC opinion, acknowledged that fact. The first issue this court faced in ICC was AEP's request to get full cost pricing for transmission across its existing system. And this court acknowledged that what was involved with sunk cost sustained the Commission's determination that only marginal cost pricing was appropriate. But it said very clearly that the case would be far different if new facilities were involved, because then it would be imperative that full cost recovery be allowed, because those costs would not be those facilities would not be built unless the utility could recover its cost.
Well, doesn't your proposal result in very arbitrary differences in prices depending on precisely where the customer is located?
It's our position is the FERC's expansion of the notion of the anti-pancaking bar in 2003 produces that very result. What we're looking for is treat everybody the same as the people within PISO.
What are you talking about? To the customers, treating the customers the same?
The users of the grid, yes. We believe that everybody should pay the same for facilities necessary to enhance availability of power and affordability of power.
So I still want to know if maybe I'm being too literal about this, but if there's a wind farm in northern Indiana, and I know that there are actually quite a few of them there, and somebody in the middle of Wisconsin somehow winds up getting that, being a purchaser of that power, it's going to cross from MISO into PJM and then back out into MISO somehow as
yes.
it travels along. And is it going to get charged each time it moves across a boundary?
No. We have brooked no disagreement with the pancaking injunction. It has worked out well. It has worked for both customers and PJM and MISO, continues to do so. What we object to is the imposition of that bar to the creation of new facilities, and only new facilities as between MISO and PJM.
So you're saying there shouldn't be any border charge, but the ultimate user fee, or whatever, I'm not sure what the right word to use for it is, but the fee that we're talking about here, the basis of the cost recovery that, that FERC has chosen ought to be the same.
It applies equally to all users of the grid. And it's
both inside MISO and outside MISO.
And if
except for the PJM people.
Yes, and if PJM customers disagree with that charge, they simply do not have to use the MISO grid.
Are you saying that this irregular border between PJM and MISO is irrelevant?
Yes, sir.
It could be as squiggly as, and it would make no difference?
No.
Because you basically
what about
don't.
What if the transmission line crosses the border twice because of this?
Again, all the more reason to have an anti-pancaking prohibition. Now,
but you're saying that's separate from what we're talking about.
Yes, it is. Because
that's what comes out of the 2003 order.
Right.
And that's the PJM scene.
Right.
Yeah.
And the commission itself in 2004 orders said, well, gosh, the elimination of revenue for transactions between MISO and PJM might discourage the construction of necessary facilities. Therefore, we order MISO under 206 of Federal Power Act to adopt cost allocation procedures for new facilities, cross-border facilities, those located in either PJM that benefit MISO or located in PJM that are MISO benefiting PJM.
What is your gripe against PERC? I've lost the thread.
You want us to tell FERC that they should not have exempted PJM
from
the export.
Yes, Your Honor. No base for it. I know my light is on. Thank you very much for your attention.
Mr. Shepard?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is John Shepard. I'm here for the Department of Utilities, First Energy, and Duke. PERC hasn't responded to our arguments in the merits, so the only issue before you today for decision is whether or not we have standing. And if we have standing...
Or ripeness, I think. I mean, I think it's all part of the same.
I think you're right, Your Honor. At some point, they do merge. I think I do not want to put words in PERC's mouth, but I believe that ripeness is a more accurate description of what their real theory is rather than standing.
So explain why they're not exactly right about that. You have proceedings going on right now that are going to ascertain whether you owe even as much as a penny.
Your Honor, the Schedule 39 hearing ended on Monday. It's over now. There are several reasons why it does not deprive this current controversy of ripeness. The first and most important is that the liability imposed in this proceeding, which you will find at paragraph 322 of the rehearing order, is that we're made responsible for any costs previously allocated to us prior to our withdrawal. And MISO's position has always been that we were already allocated those costs.
Cost is zero. I have Judge Wood's...
One moment, sir. I will get right to that. So FERC's position here is that we're subject to a negotiated or contested exit fee agreement. A contested exit fee agreement meaning an unexecuted agreement.
But it's going to have many components. Yeah. I mean, there may not be a component for MVP projects.
Your Honor, we signed an exit fee agreement a long time before the rehearing order was established. The rehearing order, when it said that we could be subject to a contested exit fee agreement, if it made any sense at all, could only have been referring to potentially another exit fee agreement.
When they calculate the your departure cost, when you challenge that, you can raise all these issues.
That is not true, Your Honor. That is absolutely not true.
Why?
They have already excluded us from raising those arguments.
We always wait till damage. We always almost always wait till damages are assessed before we consider the final judgment.
Your Honor, in the context of agency rulemaking, this happens all the time. A rule is issued, then there can be a separate fight about compliance. But if you want to attack the original injury, which here is the notion we could ever, under any legal or rational basis, be held responsible.
It's a hypothetical. It's you know, us off dreaming in the sky. You know, if 20 things happen, might you be subject to something? But it seems to me it all depends on facts. It depends on when you left. It depends on when these projects were conceptualized. It depends on when monies started being spent for them.
All due respect, Your Honor, we were entirely out of MISO before any of these projects were built.
I know that's your position on the facts, and I'm sure you urged it in this hearing.
Yes, we did.
I'm certain.
The problem, however, Your Honor, is that if we prevail in the Schedule 39 hearing, all we have done is chop one head off of a hydra. That is a formula designed to
What other financial exposure do you have if you win in this hearing?
What other financial exposure do we have if we
for
win
the MPPs, in this hearing? Yes. If you can...
Our exposure is exposure to a future contested exit fee agreement, which the orders here do not bar MISO from filing, even if we win the Schedule 39.
A new? How many times are you exiting?
Your Honor, we only exited once. But I'm telling you, their litigation position has been consistently that we will have to file another exit fee agreement that they can force on us and as a contested, unexecuted 205 filing, and then we're going to have to litigate it again. I'm telling you that that is their position. It has been their position consistently. Second, what is the point of waiting till the end of the Schedule 39 proceeding? The dispute then will be the same as it is here. These are arguments
in
the merits.
There are so many facts that seem to me unresolved at this point. Now, I don't want to get into the niceties of administrative preclusion and what FERC can say to you and what you can say to them, but it seems to me that we need to nail down certain basic facts, and that's what the hearing you just finished is about.
No, Your Honor. All the facts necessary to deal with this situation were already present in this case. The Michigan Thumb Project would be charged to us, according to MISO, based on our load ratio share basis of MISO. We know what that number is, not to the penny, but to within $5 million or so. There was no real dubiousness about that. We've seen those numbers now emerge in the Schedule 39 proceeding. The only other facts that are relevant are, in fact, they're not any other relevant facts.
But
we
you
left,
can't be charged for anything saying? They're doing that they start right now. Everybody seems to agree that you really
no,
did
No, Your
exit.
Honor, that is not their position. Their position is that the orders here created an exit fee liability, and that exit fee liability lived on it was placed on us before we left, and because it was placed on us before we left, the fact they're building things later and we're using them later means that we're not excused.
No, I don't think we're communicating well.
I'll do my best to listen.
The language of the regulation and the statute talks about, and actually the agreements, to the extent that things were started, I feel like you're making an argument that if they start a project in 2025, you're going to be liable for exit fees for it, and I just don't read any of the underlying documents that way.
Your Honor, light's gone on, but the only thing they are trying to tag First Energy with is the Michigan Thumb Project, because that is the only project arguably approved prior to our departure.
Okay, with respect there is a limit. You'll agree with that.
With respect to Duke, that's for $160 million. With respect to Duke, it's a considerably larger amount because of the MVP portfolio approved on December 8th, 2011.
So the list was longer for Duke, but also finite.
It is a known amount. Yes,
and,
Your Honor.
And Duke and First Energy are both arguing in this other proceeding that, in fact, they were really out before those things. Those
yes, Your Honor. The only issue we've laid for you the issues in the Schedule 39 hearing, which do not include the arguments before this court on the merits, which do not include the arguments that FERC did not address in its orders, which do not include the arguments and merits that FERC has chosen not to answer here. We have never had a day in court on that. And if you're going to ask FERC anything, ask them when we get our day in court. When do we get a decision on the question whether or not an MVP usage rate can ever rationally be charged to an entity that was gone before they existed?
Okay, so we'll go to the other side. Ms. Amarkill?
May it please the Court, Jennifer Amarkill for the Commission. I'm going to be covering the issues argued by the first two petitioners' counsel, the collective arguments about cost allocation, and my co-counsel, Holly Caper, will be arguing or presenting on the First Energy and Duke issues as well as the PJM exports.
So we'll save Mr. Shepard's question for her.
Yes, please.
All right.
I'd like to start out with addressing the question about whether, in particular, Hoosier has had enough information and evidence given to it by the Midwest ISO.
I have a broader question. What is FERC's attitude toward intra-regional cost-benefit disparities? Do you regard them as totally irrelevant, and that the remedy for someone in MISO who thinks that his cost will greatly exceed his benefits simply to leave MISO?
I believe that is definitely one possibility for those that are unhappy with...
Anyone can leave one of these RTOs, is that right?
Yes, you can vote with your feet if you don't like what the cost allocation is.
Of course, that can lead to these awkward enclaves like ComEd. Right. That's a problem.
It is a problem that the commission has worked through before, and there are other RTOs that don't have perfect
seats. So in other words, you could say to Michigan, because you're somehow isolated from the rest of the system, we are building a plant we're authorizing a plant, so you have some benefits. But because you get nothing from these other other generators in MISO, the transmission fees you pay will greatly exceed the benefits. Now, if those are the facts, is it FERC's position that that's irrelevant? That provided the overall benefits of the multi-value tariff exceed the costs, internal disparities, unless there's discrimination, what have you, are irrelevant.
The facts are not correct, Your Honor, as you stated them. The Michigan...
This is hypothetical.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
What weight does, if any, does FERC give to intra-regional disparities in the costs and benefits borne by particular states or what have you, utilities?
Well, in these orders, Your Honor, the commission gave consideration to the
inter-regional... You're not answering my question. What weight, if any, does FERC give to these intra-regional disparities?
You're saying within the Midwest ISO, the disparities within the Midwest ISO?
Imagine a clearer question. You have MISO, and let's assume that if you think of MISO as one unit, the benefits of this tariff exceed the costs. And the question is, well, that doesn't mean that everybody benefits equally, and some people or some entities may not benefit at all. And then the question is, what weight, if any, does FERC give to such disparities in the allocation of costs and benefits within MISO?
I think more recently the commission's given it much greater weight, and it looks...
We told it to.
Yes, Your Honor, exactly. And so...
What weight did it give in this case? What consideration? What about these data? Does this treasure trove of data in MISO we're hearing about, does FERC have those data?
Can I point, Your Honor, to the joint appendix at page 2234, this is the rehearing order, where it talks about the data.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a footnote that points to the kind of data that we've been talking about today. This is a discussion in the rehearing order that... about the kinds of benefits that Michigan receives in addition to the Michigan Thumb Project from the other MVP projects. And footnote 326 cites to a piece of data where the Midwest ISO has shown that the benefits are spread roughly equally, and it gives the results of its analysis, of its modeling analysis, of the production cost benefits. And it gives that by subregion. On page 12 of our brief, we put out we put forward the subregions. And Michigan is pretty much, the lower peninsula of Michigan is pretty much all by itself in that subregion. And it, the analysis shows, the data show that in 2021, the annual benefits to Michigan will far exceed the cost, and that's from all of the MVPs, not just from the Michigan thumb.
Is this partly because of NIPSCO?
I think that the benefits flow through the connection between NIPSCO and Michigan, and the commission recognized that there is a limited connection between the Lower Peninsula and the rest of the Midwest ISO. But
it's through that connection that Michigan will benefit from some of the projects outside of Michigan. Is that the idea?
It's through that connection and through strengthening those connections, because the Michigan thumb will strengthen that connection, and the other MVPs will also strengthen that connection and make the region more cohesive so that benefits such as lower cost power can flow to Michigan from other areas.
So in other words, other infrastructure improvements you're talking about?
I'm talking about these specific infrastructure improvements that are the 16 starter projects. Yes.
Okay.
And then the data that Hoosier was seeking about its individual costs to the pricings at the pricing zone level, the Midwest ISO, and I'll point you to page 49 of our brief, the Midwest ISO said that it would do pricing zone analyses for some types of benefits if it was qualifying and identifying a project under the second or third criteria. It identified the Michigan Thumb project under the first criteria. So
that's a public policy oriented criteria.
Yes, that's the public policy criteria, yes. The analysis was not done on a pricing zone level for the production costs, but Midwest ISO did share the subregional cost benefit analysis. It shared all the production costs on a subregional level. So Hoosier can see that Indiana and Illinois and Missouri are going to get a certain level of benefits. Now, those benefits are certainly in dispute because there are five different scenarios that the Midwest ISO conducts to estimate these benefits. And you can always cherry pick the high or the low one, but there's certainly a plethora of data available on the benefits at the subregion level.
Now, what Mr. Cullen said that Indiana has no renewable energy policy. It will have one eventually. Now these projects, of course, are very, very long term. So in trying to estimate costs and benefits, how far ahead does FERC look, and what does it do with uncertainties, such as when will Indiana have a renewable energy policy?
Well, one of the reasons that it broadly allocates is because of that uncertainty. Here, in this case, Midwest ISO was able to present information out to 2025. But it's, the reliability of the data and projections and estimates out to 2025, the further out you get, of course, the less reliable. And the commission took that into account, that the flow of power of these kinds of projects will change over time. Direction will change. Generators will be added in one area and retired in another area.
And also the cost can go down, can't they?
Yes, that's the hope, Your Honor.
Yeah, and so it'll still make sense to use that public policy criterion.
Yes.
And there's no need then for a sunset clause, given the fact that it's analyzed on a fairly regular basis.
And the stakeholders decide what the public policy is. Yes, Your Honor, exactly.
So the stakeholders are MISO's members,
Yes, the stakeholders are its members, its market participants, mm-hmm. It's what they call transmission-dependent utilities, those utilities that don't own transmission.
Did they vote on the tariff?
They vote on tariff changes, but the final vote is the board's, the Midwest ISO board's vote.
But it is the board of the...
of the Midwest ISO.
Representative of... Were there dissenters? Did Michigan say we don't like this?
Michigan was not a dissenter, I don't believe. But, yes, there were dissenters. There were entities that were not on board, but the vast majority agreed that this was a good tariff.
So is there any extent to which FERC is taking the position that the structure of this tariff, because it's at the user level, itself somehow allocates the burden across the region? The tariff is the same every unit of power you buy, you pay this tariff within MISO?
Yes, it's the Commission's position that this tariff will work together with the stakeholder process and the other protections to ensure that the region, there are region-wide benefits and that all entities experience those benefits.
And as I understand it, FERC's approval of imposing costs based on total usage rather than peak demand makes sense because the states are requiring that a certain percentage of total use be wind power.
That
correct.
Is one.
And so there's not as much concern about when it's being used.
That is one reason, Your Honor. And the other is that planning has changed very dramatically from when it was small utilities planning for their peak loads. Now Midwest ISO plans for these kind of bulk power flows across its system, which are not always, and in this record, Midwest ISO stated that predominantly those were non-peak flows. They weren't on the peak hour. So those are the two reasons why a usage charge instead of a demand charge or a megawatt charge was selected and approved by the Commission here.
Are you going to discuss the PJM issue or your co-counsel?
My co-counsel is going to discuss that, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, I
just had one further question about the transmission reservations. As I understand it, that kind of is a factor that goes into determination of peak.
Yes. In a traditional system, transmission reservations are made by generators that want to flow their power across the system. Mm-hmm. But the way that the Midwest ISO system works is generators now bid into the market, and if they're selected, they don't have to have a transmission reservation to flow their power. And load that wants to buy power does not have to have a transmission reservation.
They don't have to have okay.
They have a reservation for their peak load, but these extra, what they used to call off-system sales, those kinds of reservations are no longer prevalent. There's some of them, but they're no longer prevalent in the
Midwest ISO. Is that a consequence of regionalization? Or
yes, it's a consequence of the formation of regional transmission operators and their mm-hmm. markets whereby the most efficient dispatch is gained from generators bidding marginal costs and stacking up all of those bids in the most efficient way and meeting the load demands in that way.
And I have one final question. In terms of this public policy and your criterion one, did everyone fall into that category? I know you have criterion two and three, which are a little more vague. Did everybody fall into one? Did you do that analysis?
So there have been three transmission plans, I believe, since these orders issued. And in the first 2010 transmission expansion plan, there was one MVP, and yes, it was a criterion one. And then there were, I believe, 16 more in 2011, and they were all criterion one. And in 2012, there have been no MVPs.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Amarkale. Ms. Kafer?
Good morning. Holly Kafer for the Commission. I believe I should start with the PJM export issue, if that's pleasing to the Court. The first thing I would like to make clear is that MISO's proposal to...
Speak a little louder. I'm having...
Apologize. MISO's proposal to charge the MVP usage charge to exports to PJM would not result in equal treatment of load in PJM as compared to other external loads, external to MISO. And that is exactly because of the continuing irregular scheme and unique nature.
How does that affect it? So if you sell from MISO to the Southwest, you charge, right? But why does the irregularity of the border between PJM and MISO justify such a radical provision as not allowing MISO to charge?
So I have two answers to your question. The first is the factual that there would be two separate charges allocated to a transaction that crosses the border. And when you have multiple charges, it's inherently inefficient.
That would be true with any out-of-region sale.
No, it wouldn't be true with it because what the Commission found back, and this goes back to 2003, and I should point out that the Midwest ISO did not satisfy its burden in presenting changed circumstances here. What the Commission found was that the irregular border results in those extra charges. This does not happen.
Why?
So, for instance, let's take the Commonwealth Edison Island that we've all recognized. If Commonwealth Edison wants to import charges, it would need to pay both MISO and, import a transaction, it would need to pay both MISO and PJM. Transactions over other MISO borders to other areas are not subject to that same, and it's because of the islands. Not just the islands, but because of the irregular scope and configuration. And
so could I just clarify that? Because let me look at the western border. It looks like the westernmost part of Iowa is outside the MISO region, and that's not PJM either. It's whatever it is. So if energy is sold from central Iowa out in a westerly direction toward Nebraska, isn't there the same thing? Wouldn't you be paying both MISO and whoever it is who's out there?
I believe the answer is no. And what the Commission found, and again, this goes back to 2003, is that the unique configuration of MISO and PJM results in these extra charges. It also results in inefficiencies in how the grid is run.
I go back to my other question? So I was imagining something that started in MISO in the middle of Indiana and then moved into the ComEd island of PJM and then moved further up into Wisconsin. Are there like three charges then? Or...
It's probably a simplification to say that there are three charges, but the point is that the end result is that they would have to pay more. So they would be paying more than a charge that would go external.
Is three is a larger number than two. So even if in my first hypothetical there were two, if because of this island quality, the possibility of some number greater than two.
And I should say, the specific problem here is the type of charge that MISO proposed to allocate to load in PJM. As Mr. Teichler pointed out for the Midwest ISO, the Commission directed Midwest ISO and PJM together, this is back in 2004, to deal with the potential for rate pancaking for new facilities. And that is exactly what MISO and PJM did, and they developed different cost allocation schemes for new facilities that the Commission then approved. There's one for economic facilities, there's one for reliability facilities. And this is discussed in the first order, the MVP order at paragraph 397. So MISO and PJM know how to come up with a cost allocation scheme that respects both the ongoing prohibition on rate caking and the need for roughly commensurate allocation of costs. They did it for these other types of facilities. MISO here, I believe the word that PJM used in their brief, was that they unilaterally tried to impose this new cost that would be rate pancaking. They know how to do it in a way that respects
When you say know how to do it, you mean they get together with PJM and decide how to allocate the expense of a rate that's no higher than it would be if there were one region? Is that the idea?
Exactly. There are ways in which rates can be designed in order to avoid the additional costs that would be allocated to PJM load, again, as compared to other external loads. They did it for...
So what you're thinking of is this is what we don't talk about a lot anymore. This was called divisions in the railroad industry because you're constantly running your cars on someone else's train and your train on your railroad tracks, but it continues onto someone else's, and the fees are and the total cost of the trip across several different railroad lines are divided among the different lines. Is that the analogy?
I think that's a very apt analogy, Your Honor. Whenever you're paying multiple charges, what the Commission found, this goes back to Order 2000, this is one of the primary driving reasons behind the creation of regional markets to begin with, is to eliminate the multiple charges. For me, multiple charges is an easier way to think about it than the stack of pancakes. If you'd like, I can address the First Energy and Duke issues.
If you could quickly say something about First Energy, I'd appreciate it.
Right. I think the best thing that I can say there is that all of the issues are on the table in the Schedule 39 proceeding that is ongoing before the Commission right now. They are either pending on rehearing before the Commission as to what the scope of the issues should be, whether they should have any costs at all, or they're being addressed in the hearing that just concluded the other day. The Commission is on record as saying that the Midwest ISO, in their brief to this court, says it three times, that the question of what, if any, costs should be allocated to First Energy and Duke in particular is on the table in Schedule 39 in their brief at pages 11, 13, and 16.
Now, Mr. Shepard implied that the outcome of this proceeding will not be a final decision on that. Can you explain
the
that?
The Commission's position is that this case is not ripe for review. What...
Here, this case, but what about the other one, though?
Oh, the other one. I'm sorry. So, first of all, as to the potential for a new exit fee agreement, in the Schedule 39 hearing order at paragraph 75 and 101, and the site for that is 138 FERC 61140, the Commission expressly set the issue of whether any charges can be allocated to First Energy in particular because of the timing of their exit fee agreement and the nature of their exit fee agreement, whether they can be assessed any charges at all consistent with the exit fee agreement.
Mm-hmm.
So just to wrap up, all of those questions are on the table in the Schedule 39 proceeding.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Kaver. Flynn?
May it please the Court, Paul Flynn on behalf of the Midwest ISO transmission owners and a number of other interveners in support of FERC on the issue of allocating MVP costs region-wide and specifically to the Michigan parties as well. Let me get to Judge Posner's question about FERC's concern. To what extent was FERC concerned about intra-regional benefits? Because I think that's fundamental to those two issues. And certainly when we look at the orders, we see abundant concern that FERC over and over is making sure the costs will be fairly and evenly spread across the region. where you see that is far...
I should really have mentioned it to Ms. Amarkel. I was bothered by the fact that there weren't any numbers in the government's brief. I didn't get a sense that a serious effort had been made by MISO or by the government to attach some numbers to these estimates. So, for example, with Indiana's concern has no renewable. If the commission wants to say, you know, there's some substantial probability that all states will have renewable energy policies within the next 20 years, or within the life of the projects that are being built, and if Indiana had it, it would confer the following benefits, I would be more comfortable.
Well, Your Honor, in fact, there is substantial evidence on the quantitative benefits and where that comes in. Again, recall that they're setting up...
That evidence, I have to admit, I found the FERC's orders pretty impenetrable. Is that where we would find some quantification of these... There is benefits and costs?
In the filing party's original testimony that initiated this case, there was a presentation through witnesses of quantitative analyses of the costs and benefits of these starter projects. And it determined that there was about $500 to $700 worth of directly calculable quantitative benefits, $500 to $700 million of those, versus about $600 million in costs.
I understand the aggregate. Sorry.
FERC has, I mean, I think Judge Posner's, I mean, these 1,000 pages worth of FERC orders or whatever it is aren't, maybe they're good bedtime reading, but if you're an insomniac. But there is some, the other parties talk quite a bit about numbers here and there, and I take it these are findable within the FERC orders, the regular order and the rehearing order.
Yes, absolutely. I'm sorry, I don't have that.
Aren't they aggregate? Regional
no, the
breakdowns.
The analysis were also done, as I think Counsel for FERC, Ms. Amarkel, just indicated, was the production cost studies were also looked at on a sub-regional basis. And in each of the areas, sub-regional basis that they looked at, each of those areas, the benefits exceeded costs.
So, of course, some of these benefits are very maybe impossible to quantify. But, for example, for Michigan, supposing it's the case that that some of these projects outside of Michigan will improve Michigan's access through NIPSCO to electricity from other generators. Is any effort made to estimate the benefits of that greater reliability?
Yes, in fact, it was. It's referenced. It's in the record. It's referenced in the commission's orders when they're talking about the Michigan-specific issues. Because the interesting thing about Michigan is that because of the relatively weak interconnections with the rest of MISO, they currently pay somewhat higher than average energy costs. And this is referenced in the market monitor reports that FERC identifies. And so as a result of that, they actually stand to gain a significant benefit from an internal strengthening of the ties within MISO to knit MISO more strongly together so that they can, they were determined to make a fairly significant reduction in those average energy costs as a result of the strengthening of ties within MISO, including strengthening of ties between MISO and the rest of Michigan, and that is in the record. So there are quantifiable benefits of power can move more efficiently, so the overall cost of you don't have to run this expensive unit, you can run this less expensive unit. That's a quantitative benefit. You don't need as many transmission line losses because of the efficiency, and you don't need to have as much peak period capacity because of the synergistic effects of these changes. Those are all quantitative benefits, and those are identified in the record. Then you also have the qualitative benefits. And those are all looked at on a sub-regional basis. And FERC concluded, yes, those, based on the production cost studies, that those indeed are broadly spread throughout the region. Then you also have the less readily quantifiable benefits of things like public policy. And FERC looked at it there and said, well, what we see is that 12 out of 13 of these states have some sort of policy, guidance, requirement, standard in favor of renewables. Indiana has a 10% voluntary guideline on that. And FERC cited that. And so this is a consensus public policy. So let's us as MISO design a transmission plan that is the least cost and optimal approach to address that consensus issue. Again, that's not readily quantifiable, but it's there. And reliability, of course, again, you have the fundamental fact of an integrated network. The integrated network cases in the past have involved single utility systems because that's all that was operated on a single utility basis. Now you have MISO being operated on a regional basis.
Do you have any sense of the exit cost for MISO? Suppose one of the utility companies feels it's whatever the calculations by the FERC, it just feels that it is really incurring disproportionate costs. How difficult is it for it to leave? Michigan, the lawyer for Michigan said as a practical matter, it was very difficult. Has anybody ever left MISO?
MISO was voluntarily farmed, and people can voluntarily depart. That's first policy, but it takes a filing. And
was ComEd a defector from MISO, or had it never been part of MISO?
ComEd was never part of the Midwest ISO. It was part of a different group that was going to form between the Midwest ISO and PJM that ultimately split up in
Michigan. Right, that was something MISO didn't want to happen. But we do have First Energy and Duke who left.
Yes, that's correct.
So people
can leave, and of course the key question.
So anyone on the border can leave, but I guess there's an awkwardness if you're an enclave.
What's more important to that is the individual utilities, because it's the transmission owner. The transmission owner will make that determination on
which kind of utilities you said something.
Those that own the transmission lines.
Okay.
When I joined Midwest ISO, I'm a transmission facility owner. I take my loads with me, in effect, into MISO. So they're the ones that are the key decision makers on that. Obviously, they're going to get substantial input from their state commissions on that very question. But it's ultimately going to be their assessment of all the costs and all the benefits. Will I and my state ratepayers get a better deal in PJM or get a better deal in the Midwest ISO? But that option is always there.
That option is what? I'm sorry. I'm
it's always there.
The option to leave.
That's right.
But what is the? But you say the costs of leaving are different for if you own transmission lines or you're just a generator or what?
No, the people that essentially form the Midwest ISO as it exists today is those who own transmission. The Midwest ISO operates their transmission. So what makes MISO what it is these transmission owners that have joined together through this agreement and allowed MISO to run there. So the decision to leave MISO is a decision that, in effect, is made by the transmission owners with input from their state commissions and their stakeholders. So getting back to the intra-regional benefits you have, a key factor here is FERC required that once you have these three criteria and then you will look at these various projects that pass the criteria, then you still have to look at it on a portfolio basis. And the purpose of looking at it on a portfolio basis is to ensure that the package of MVPs that you approve will provide broad, regional, evenly distributed benefits. That's a critical aspect of this, and it's a critical safeguard that supports FERC's overall decision, along with this evidence that they had in the record of these broad benefits. Can I briefly address the data question?
Sure.
I realize my time is up. MISO has no axe to grind. They're a nonprofit, and they are there to serve their members. They do studies all the time. They share those with their stakeholders all the time when they prepare them. And so much of what was referenced here, like these production cost studies and regional use studies, are things that have been publicly posted by PJM for the benefit of all their members. There is sometimes a confidentiality.
MISO or PJM?
I'm sorry. I beg your pardon. By MISO. There sometimes is a confidentiality issue because when you're talking about production cost information, if I'm an individual generator, I don't want my competitors to what my particular production cost is. But subject to that confidentiality issue, this data was out there. It may not have been submitted in the record, but there were expert witnesses who summarized the results of that and put the quantitative numbers in. If that's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Mr. Foster?
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm David Foster for First Energy on behalf of the PJM parties. The fundamental problem here is that MISO is making a unilateral attempt to make PJM ratepayers right here in Chicago all the way through North Carolina pay the fixed cost for transmission clear across the country from South Dakota. And that's illegal for a couple of reasons. The first is that it reinstitutes pancaking in violation of the 2003 order. And
well,
I wanted
it wouldn't
to
be if it was all a regional transmission organization. This is about the fact that we have more than one regional transmission organization in the United States, PJM being a separate one, right?
That's correct. But the big thing here is that it's reciprocal. And there were questions earlier today about what happens to power that crosses the MISO lines out in the southwest. And the key point is that when power comes back across from SPP, which is the RTO that's on the southwest corner, and back into MISO, SPP is allowed to charge a pancake rate there as well. But the 2003 ban still applies to PJM, and one of the fundamental problems here is it's not a reciprocal set of charges going both ways. And the reason that this matters is there were two problems before the commission that they had to deal with in 2003 and 2004. One is a very fundamental policy that they wanted energy to flow, so you'd end up with the lowest marginal cost generation being used. And rate pancaking gets in the way of that, where fixed costs are built into MISO's rate. If you get the rate pancaking at that point, an entity like ComEd here in PJM that has to choose which energy we don't want to use when we need more of it is going to pick, even if it's more expensive, generation that's close by rather than less expensive generation that's far away. And that was the fundamental problem. They wanted the price of energy to send a signal about which energy was cheaper. And when you pancake those rates, you end up distorting that market. And that was the fundamental economic policy behind the 2003 order. And they recognized, as FERC often does, that there are lots of parts of the problem that they deal with. And the other part was, okay, well, if we don't pancake, we're going to end up with maybe we'll have underinvestment because there might be some projects that are built in MISO and sink in PJM, and we want to figure out how to allocate those charges too. And they came up with a specific order in 2004 in paragraph 60, and they said develop a joint process to allocate those projects. You know, one of the ways you can do it is to make a fixed allocation for the projects by agreement so that it doesn't get built into the marginal price and affect the signal that the marginal price sends. But that's not what MISO's doing here. MISO's made a unilateral attempt to run around that 2003 anti-pancaking order between MISO and PJM.
Well, MISO is saying these are new circumstances, that the situation that was being addressed in 2003 and 4 was a different one from what we have with these multi-value project things.
Well, there are two different parts of what I understand him to be arguing, that one, the seams changed a little bit, and that's sort of classically within FERC's discretion to figure out, you know, has it changed
enough?
Yeah,
I'm not as worried about the seams as I am about whether it is, in fact, a new situation.
And you know, they conceded in their brief, which is cited in paragraph 427 and footnote 497 of the MVP order, that against most of their new projects, the rate pancaking order still applies. So they're arguing that these are sui generis or somehow different than any other new projects. And what we view the FERC orders as saying is that you can do this. The order is very clear that it does not ban MISO from trying to come up with a way to allocate some of those charges to PJM, and we'll have to figure that out. Hopefully it would proceed through a cooperative process. But it has to meet two characteristics. You can't reinstitute pancaking, and you have to match the cost allocation principles. And, you know, I mean, that was one of the things I wanted to point out today. Judge Posner asked earlier about where the numbers in the brief. Generalized system benefits under the first ICC case are not enough to force allocative cost, and there's no estimate of a dollar estimate of exactly what the benefits to the PJM entities are from the cost that MISO seeks to impose on them.
What if MISO and PJM don't agree? There's a question about some kind of bilateral monopoly. They can only deal with each other. Is there some can FERC step in? Or?
Well, MISO can file a contested proceeding, and then we would have a fight about that in front of FERC, and that would.
There's a.
It's not like, you know, we don't have veto, a permanent veto power, I guess would be one way to put it. And if the court doesn't have any further questions, I'll say thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Foster. And we'll hear a rebuttal from Owen.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd just like to make a couple of brief points. Ms. Amarkale cited to JA 2234, footnote 326, as a document that discussed sub-regional benefits. I'd like to point out that the citation there is to a document that was never part of the record before FERC. Was simply a citation to a document that FERC located on the MISO website. It was not part of the record.
Well, if it's on the MISO website, it's equally accessible to you, is it not?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. But for MISO, as the applicant, had the burden of coming forth with sufficient evidence to demonstrate that the tariff was just and reasonable. with regard to MISO's refusal to provide benefits to the Hoosier pricing zone at Hoosier's request, I think Ms. Amarkale said that the analysis wasn't done because it was a Criterion 1 MVP. Mr. Flynn referred to studies being confidential, but the MISO response at JA 1122 simply says that MISO is not providing the information because MISO deems that it's not relevant. There was no claim at the time that it was either confidential or that the analysis had not been done. And finally, with regard...
You could have sought production. You could have asked for...
No, Your Honor, and that's another point.
You can't ask FERC for an order, say you need these data?
Your Honor, under the FERC rules, discovery is only available after FERC sets a matter for evidentiary hearing. And so when FERC denied all the requests for evidentiary hearings, including that of Hoosier and SIPC, there was no opportunity in this matter for anyone to do discovery.
So you're saying that because FERC didn't want to have an evidentiary hearing but thought it had all the information that it needed, you had no way of getting these?
That's exactly right, Your Honor. Other than asking for it, which Hoosier did, and hoping that we would get it, which we did not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Moss?
Thank you. Mr. Flynn elucidated my answer earlier, which about why we didn't ask for the information when I said we didn't have an opportunity. We didn't have an opportunity because there was no evidentiary hearing and no opportunity for discovery. I also want to clarify the point on why customers who don't believe they're receiving benefits can't vote with their feet. They can't vote with their feet because they're not transmission owners. Only transmission owners can leave MISO. I represent customers and local utilities. We don't have any way of requiring the transmission owner that serves us to leave MISO, no matter how much we believe that the costs of the MVP projects are not roughly commensurate with the benefits that we'll receive. And the last point that I'd like to make is the study that Ms. Amarkale cited that is at footnote 326 of the rehearing order was done prior to the departure of First Energy from MISO. Now, at the time that the study was done, perhaps, arguably, there were benefits roughly commensurate with costs to Michigan, but that's certainly not the case now. And so the study in footnote 326 on which the Commission hinges its opinion that there are benefits to MISO Northeast transmission customers is irrelevant to the question here. I guess the final point that I'd make is in paragraph 148 where the commission of the rehearing order where the commission discusses the benefits to Michigan, we've never disagreed that Michigan receives significant benefits from the Michigan Thumb Project. It's when you look at the whole portfolio of projects, which is the way the costs are assessed here, the Michigan doesn't receive benefits commensurate with the costs that will be charged. Thank you.
You know, before you sit down, it's something very strange. In your brief, for example, when you ask for the evidentiary hearing, you make it sound as if you want live witnesses and an opportunity to present sworn testimony. You don't say anything about needing an evidentiary hearing in order to obtain data from ISO.
Well, I would say it's all the same thing. I mean, perhaps the...
I don't get all the same thing.
Well, we would disagree
there's
that...
There's nothing in your brief, this section of your brief, to suggest that you need access to MISO data. It's not anything about discovery. You want an opportunity to present your own evidence, sworn testimony, live testimony. You don't say anything about we need an evidentiary hearing because otherwise you won't let us do discovery.
Well, perhaps it wasn't clear in the brief, but that's
well, it wasn't stated in the brief, period. It's not a matter of clear. There's no unclear statement that we're hogtied because we can't get access to secret MISO data.
Well, the holding of the hearing would give us the opportunity to engage
but
in discovery.
But you have to tell us in your brief that you want us to, that the reasons you want something. This business about secret MISO data, I think, has surfaced at this argument for the first time. Okay. Well, thank you, Ms. Moss. Mr. Teichman?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you very much. I'd just like to clarify for the record that there is no rate pancaking involved in this case. There is not the circumstance.
There's no what involved?
Rate pancaking involved in this case. There is not the circumstance that power flows from MISO to ComEd bearing one charge and being assessed another charge moving out.
Okay, but picking up on what Mr. Foster was saying, if suppose you have a project in MISO that's going to be a very attractive project for selling electricity to people in PJM. And if you're not allowed to charge people in PCM, you can't finance the project.
Wouldn't be built.
So what she said, what Mr. Foster said was, well, you go to PJM and you say, you know, we'd like to supply you. We have to be able to charge. And so, you know, let's make a deal. We allocate the cost because you're going to benefit and we're going to benefit. And if we can't agree, then FERC will arbitrate our dispute.
Yeah,
what's wrong with that? Why does it take care of the problem?
There's not a problem with that. What we have here is the mechanism put in place in 2004 was for discrete facilities on the border. Here, this is like nature, but much larger. We can't go to everyone that takes power from the grid and negotiate a separate agreement. So we came to the commission with the notion of here are facilities in MISO. They have a region-wide benefit.
You have to go to every customer. You go to PJM.
No, not necessarily. This is a much broader set of facilities.
Go to PJM and go to Southwest. How many of these RTOs
are there? We have many export points.
Go to all of them. Well, I don't get it.
We thought we did appropriate thing in putting this before the commission. Everybody had an opportunity to participate. And this was the scheme. And as this court has held, if you use the facilities, you've caused cost to be incurred. This is simply causation tracking. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Teichler. Mr. Shepard?
Thank you, Your Honor. We're very pleased to learn that FERC counsel thinks that we're going to have the opportunity to argue the issues that should have been addressed below in some future proceeding after Schedule 39. But Chenery tells us that post hoc representations by counsel don't count for much. The text of the Schedule 39 order is pretty plain. It keeps being thrown in our face in a different proceeding where we're told that they already decided all the issues
so
in the merits.
What would you like to order FERC to do?
I would like, Your Honor, to compel FERC on remand and either vacate the order or simply remand for them to address in this proceeding, before they try to attach liability to us, our arguments that there is no legal or rational basis to tell someone who is leaving an RTO they're responsible for a usage rate for a project that has never been built. That is not possible.
What you just wanted to make sure was that that FERC in years to come doesn't keep chopping off little pieces of your tail, item by, you know, inch by inch, so you have no tail left, right? Isn't that what you want us to tell them? They have to have a definitive proceeding which would resolve forever your departure expense. Isn't that what you want?
Your Honor, we gave them all they needed in this proceeding.
Isn't
There's no
that
reason.
What you want?
Yes, Your Honor, we want our day in court, and we have yet to receive it.
Day in court. We can tell them, obviously, we have to discuss this. We can tell them that you're entitled to have a definitive a resolution of all your departure liability, so that you don't have to worry in the future that my soul will come back and try to get more from you. That's what you want, right?
Yes, Your Honor, that is what we want, absent having the orders vacated in the first place. With respect to the merits, because it ties into many of the other questions that you asked, there is a way of showing what the costs and benefits are of a particular decision. GT maps and power flow both show those things. We're the only party, FirstEnergy is the only party in this entire proceeding that submitted for the record evidence about costs and benefits, and what it shows is that there is absolutely no benefit from the Michigan Thumb Project to anyone in the ATSI zone. That is what record evidence looks like. Saying that something is available on some website is not record evidence under FPA Section 205.
Why? What's wrong with looking at a website of your opponent?
Your Honor, because it can't be challenged.
You go to the website, you collect evidence, and if you don't like it, if you think it's erroneous, you say so.
No, Your Honor, that doesn't work if no one gives you the underlying data. One of the reasons why the Schedule 39 case...
Underlying data? You ask for the underlying data.
We did. And there was none. We tried to ask for none.
That's great for you, right? You've looked at the website. You found their data. You discover that they're groundless data. And you've scored a victory.
Your Honor, how is someone supposed to do that in a protest of something which is not filed in
the notion that you can't get all the data you want is not realistic.
Your Honor, I'm saying that if FERC sets a protest filing date that is prior to the time when the study is posted, how is one supposed to respond to it? How is one supposed to do that? We know for a fact that the studies that they want to rely upon were not created until August, several weeks after they actually filed the MVP proceeding. They simply did not exist. We have discovery. It is public. It is in the Schedule 39 proceeding, and it shows that there were no such numbers in existence.
All right, so when these data... Are you saying you show that these data were phony or they were belated or what have
belated
you?
Belated would be a better word.
Belated.
Phony would be one that I would argue, yes, as well.
Now, were you able to tell FERC that these data are belated and should be ignored?
Well, in FirstEnergy's case, and Duke is a Duke's different
question.
Yes, we were able to tell. Well, Your Honor, we asked them. We pointed them to Scott Gass's testimony.
Hey, slow down, would you please?
Yes, Your Honor.
You have a chance to tell FERC these are belated data, you shouldn't consider them, or they're no good, or they're phony. You have a chance to tell them that.
Yes, Your Honor, and we're entitled.
What was their response?
There was no response, Your Honor. We pointed them to the evidence presented by Scott Gass, the only sworn testimony that was actually in the record. There is no response to that argument by them. None. And it says there are no benefits from the Michigan Thumb Project to the ATSI zone.
You're saying you showed there were no benefits and FERC...
completely blew that off, Your Honor, in violation of the APA. They are not allowed to simply not respond to facially legitimate arguments brought before them.
That's a procedural objection. All right. Well, we'll certainly consider it. Thank you. Okay, and thank you to all counsel, and we'll move on to our next.